tightest definition one could get is that it's achieving agreement, no, achieving a decision to which everyone consents. And by everyone, I mean everyone that is a member of the group. Now, there's some important parts of that, even though it's a simplistic definition. It's achieving a decision to which everyone consents, and the key words are everyone and consents. It literally does mean every single person in the group consents to the decision, and by consent, it doesn't mean they just go along with it. It means that it's an acceptable enough decision that the people will support it. They will help put it into action. So it's not just nodding, yeah, okay. But it's, yeah, I can accept this enough that I will put my energy behind it. Okay, it's not very flowery, but that's essentially what they're after. And the... I guess the purpose of consensus decision-making over some other models of decision-making is that it hopes primarily to make the best decision for everyone in the group at that particular time. In other words, it's striving for the best decision, the most creative decision, not just a decision. And there's an attempt always to unify the group. In fact, as I read the book, what I was struck by was not only how much they were saying that the decisions that can come out of a well-designed consensus-making model will be the most creative and the most imaginative for the group, but the second very primary thing about consensus decision-making is what it does to the group. It's very important what happens in the group and to the group. And that... in fact, I would suspect that some of these people would turn it around and say, if the group is uniting and somehow or other using the skills that it can develop out of this process, then whatever decision comes out will be the best one for the group. Its emphasis, in some way, is on honoring everyone. Okay. I'm just going to keep going along here, and if you have questions, ask me. One other thing, besides unifying the group and the best decision, is another thing that I think is real interesting about consensus decision making is it really strives for a balance of power within the group. And what I think I mean by that is that the group itself has power. You know, there's just the power of the numbers and the sum of all the ideas being pulled together, and that's very powerful. And it tries to strive for the balance between that and the power of the individual. And within the consensus decision-making model, there's a belief that every individual has the responsibility and the right to influence that group according to what they believe is truth. So therefore, if every one of us but one agreed and was satisfied with a particular decision, that one's dissent is as honored and as worked with as if we all didn't agree. That is grist for the mill, that is fuel for the creativity. So in other words, a group can't just sort of sweep along and then the individual just says, well, okay, I'll go with you, in theory. Okay, now, what I want to do is contrast this, the consensus decision-making model, with the other kinds of models that we use to make decisions all the time. I think it's helpful sometimes to put it in comparison with others.
Before you go on, would for that one person, would the thing be dropped?
No, it would continue. The decision-making would just keep going and evolving and developing until somehow something was created that 100% of the people agreed with. Now, that can be misused, but I'm not going to talk about that. This isn't the ideal. I realized that when I started to read this, what I'm basically talking about all the time are meetings. And I started to think back to my own experience in meetings starting from who knows when, you know. And I realize that I don't have a very high opinion of meetings. In fact, when I hear there's a meeting going on, I just kind of cringe and grit my teeth and go. And you know, it's everywhere. I just feel that way about meetings. And I thought, why is that? And I thought a little bit more about it, and I, like, why do we have them, for crying out loud? Why do we have meetings anyway? Any group. And I realized that there, I think there are three functions for meetings. One is for the members of a group to get together. Sometimes a group just needs to get together, to socialize, to say, hi, how are you? I haven't seen you in a while. Gee, you look different. How's such and such? We just need to do that sometimes, and a meeting is one way to do it. Not the only way, but certainly it's one way. Another thing a meeting is for is to find out who's in the group. That is, who are the new people? What are we going to say to them? How are we going to include them? Where, you know, who are they? And we kind of look around and go, oh, who's in here? As well as to bid farewell to the ones who are leaving and draw some closure to that. We do that in meetings. We find out who we are and how we are. And then the third thing we do is we accomplish the business of the group. We try to move forward our purpose. And the consensus decision making has to do with that third thing, doing the business of the group. And if you think about decision making for yourself, personally, how difficult it is to make a personal decision. Should I come to Holden or not? Should I ask for an extension or not? Should I buy new shoes or will these last? Should I get a car? Should I sell the car? Should I fast next week? I mean, think about what you go through personally, just trying to make that decision on your own. Think how complicated that is. Well, imagine how that multiplies when you get a bunch of people together trying to decide the same thing. Of course it's hard. You know, of course it takes energy. Of course it's a drag. We're trying to accomplish something real big in a meeting. And I think I'm gaining some respect for the reasons why we get together to do this. I also believe that part of the reason we get together in a group is we want to put more heads together than our own. Two heads are better than one. 50 heads can be better than one, if we know what we're doing. Okay, so there are different ways that groups get together in meetings to make decisions. And I will draw this little diagram about this. Consensus decision making has as its basis 100% participation from the group. So if group member participation is the pivotal factor, I'm going to draw a continuum of member participation. If we have high member participation, I'd say the highest would be the consensus decision-making model. If we have low member participation in deciding something, it would probably be the autocratic method, the autocratic system. And by autocratic, I mean that there is one person who is designated as the decision maker. And everyone else then goes along with the decision. This person who's the autocrat is usually a person who's very powerful in the group or has been given a lot of power by the group. There's some real advantages to the autocratic decision-making model. It is very quick. It doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a lot of the members' time because one person is making the decision. It probably doesn't take a lot of time for the one person either. It also leads to a lot of consistency of the decisions, that over time, the decisions are consistent and predictable because the same person is making the decision. It's that person's judgment. And let's see. Oh, it's also a simple process. It doesn't drive everybody crazy because one person gets to do it. Now, it has some disadvantages in that it is only one person making the decision, so it only reflects one point of view, one set of values, one set of creative ideas. And it also, because it doesn't include the members of the group, can lead to a lack of support of the decision. If people aren't involved and they don't like the decision, there's all kinds of ways that people work behind the scenes to sabotage the decision. So there, that it is prone to that kind of problem. But it's real handy.
Judy?
Yeah.
Is a situation like where the board is not a member of the group, is that an autocratic?
No, but that's another kind of thing that I'll tell you about. I'm going up the line here.
All right.
Okay. An example of that might be, and I'm not sure if this is true, but it might be how the kitchen is run and how it's here, how it decides what food to order. Maybe that the head cook is the person who decides on the food, and that's sort of it. And it's most efficient, it's most simple, it reflects that person's understanding of the place and that person's taste and blah, da, 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 da. If you get another person in there, it might look different. Okay, I'm not sure that that's how the kitchen runs, but that's a kind of an example. Okay, if you move up the line and involve members a little bit more, you'd have the autocratic system with something called polling. And that's where one person makes the decision, but they consult with some others to get information. And the advantage to that is that it prepares some others then that the decision is in the works, and they get a little glimpse of what that autocrat might be thinking. The disadvantage is that the membership still has not had a chance to come together to chew on the decision and come up with a blend of ideas. It still relies on the one person. And as we move up, we would have the minority, what am I going to call it? Minority rule. And this is what you were talking about, Brad, where there is a small group of people within, small subset of people within the group that are designated as the decision makers. And these might be what you call a committee, a steering committee. It might be what's called a board of directors. It might be the officers, the vice president and the president and the secretary and the treasurer, so on, are designated by the group as the decision makers. It's a little better involvement because there are more people. There's no one person who is the decision maker, so the group of, the small group has to talk out loud about their ideas. And there's a blend of ideas there. The disadvantage is that, once again, you don't know if that represents the multitude of viewpoints of the group. And then we have what we're most familiar with, and I think in our society, is majority rule. And majority rule is simplistically the attempt that at least 51% of the group will all agree to the decision. That's quite a jump from my minority rule, which might only be 20 people out of a huge group. Got 51% of the group is going to agree to the decision, or some fraction above that. It could be 2/3 or 3/4 or something like that. The advantage to majority rule in a great way over all these other ones is that everyone gets to talk about the decision in majority rule. Everybody discusses it. Everybody throws in their 2 cents. So you hear from everybody in majority rule. This is in theory. So, one sense, it kind of makes some sense. And it's also fairly quick, because once all the discussion is done, the process of deciding goes like that. You raise your hand or you sign your name or whatever. The disadvantages, however, to minority rule or majority rule are many. I have quite a list of them here. And this is kind of what Dan was saying. Because the basic assumption of majority rule, the underlying assumption is competitiveness of the ideas. In other words, somebody's ideas are going to win out over somebody else's ideas. So you are either in a win position or a lose position. You are on one side or the other, finally, when the decision is made. And what that ends up then is making you feel, if you're not the winner, bad or hurt or whatever. It's like the election, the presidential election, at least when you think of the popular vote. If everybody got a vote, but if you lost, it feels like you've lost everything because your view isn't feels like it's not represented. It also has the flaw in that even though discussion is supposedly supposed to happen among everyone, it often doesn't. Those people who are more popular or more powerful or more intimidating or more aggressive can sometimes get their ideas across better than someone who's timid, not used to speaking in groups, can't find the right words, doesn't quite know what they think, and so they don't say what they're thinking, and the group really doesn't have all the information to vote on. It only votes on what it hears. The group then can be controlled in some ways by more powerful people. So even though it looks like everybody's got a chance to vote and say their piece, it might not in actuality happen. Once again, it's open to sabotage. Because there's a minority of people who lose, they can work to undermine the decision. Or they, or whatever, they'll be dissatisfied, they may leave the group and so on. I think the real pain of majority rule is because it has a difficult time honoring everyone's ideas, finding a way to do that, it really doesn't necessarily come up with the most creative solution. I want to read you an example of a group that used majority decision making. Okay, this is a group, a political group. This is an example from these people, a group that they worked with. The political group is planning a platform for the city elections. Dave proposes that the group advocate a fare increase for the bus system so service can be expanded to outlying areas. In other words, they want to expand the bus system, and he says, let's raise fares so we can have more money to work with. You say you like the idea of expanding the service, but you don't think it should be paid for by a fare increase. You want to discuss the subject more, but the chairperson is in a hurry to push this item through and move on to other issues. It is obvious that a 2/3 majority, which is what the group wants, does support the plan of the fare increase. So those 2/3 aren't interested in discussing the issue any further. They've got the number they need. So a quick vote is held, the decision is recorded in the minutes, and the discussion moves on. After the meeting, you and another person, the only other person who opposed the fare hike, express your frustration to each other. As you talk about it, you figure out another way that expanded bus service could be financed. But it's too late to think of new ideas now, and there wasn't a chance to be creative in the meeting. You're frustrated, your group and the city are deprived of your ideas, which might have been a better solution to the problem. So that's the pitfall, often, of the majority rule. Okay, now consensus decision making, the highest member participation in that, it expects 100% of the people of the group to consent to the decision. Another advantage to it is that all people are heard from, and that means literally. The group finds a way for people, regardless of their personality and their style, to be able to say their ideas, to think with the others. Now, the part of the book is on how to do that. Okay, I'm not going to talk about that tonight. But it tries to honor people's ideas and help people put into words what they're thinking and feeling. It has some disadvantages. It is slow, as you can imagine. It takes a long time. Groups that get more used to the process can speed that up some, but compared to any of these others, it's slow, no matter how good you are at it. It just takes a long time. It focuses on the strength of each person's ideas, as opposed to the majority rule, which focuses on the weakness, where are the pitfalls, where are the loopholes, where where can we say, no, this one won't work. It builds on the strength of each person's ideas in hopes that it makes a better decision in the end. Most people assume that the decisions, when they've come out of the group, are more humane, more fair, and more satisfying to the group.
You've worked hard and long, but it's worth it kind of feeling.
And the other reason I think that the consensus decision-making model is one that people adopt is that they believe that it is a social change tool. That if you're going to change society, you have to change yourself. And if you're going to learn how to be cooperative, and you want the world to be cooperative, you're going to have to start to practice it now. So you start at home. And so for many people, I guess it is an ideal, but after reading this book, I see that it's also very practical. It can work. Let me read you an example of how it worked in another group. You're a member of a group that provides training in interpersonal communication skills. They take these right out of these true life experiences. At one of your meetings, Lisa introduces a new item on the agenda. She says, an association of agencies is sponsoring a fair, and your group has been invited to have a display at the fair. So Lisa brings this up. She says, it means that they are taking our work seriously, she says, and I really want to do it. Dan adds, it'll be a great way to make new contacts, and several other group members talk about the idea enthusiastically. Someone says, won't it be a lot of work? Well, Lisa says, I'm willing to do it if someone will help, and a couple of people say they're interested in helping her. The facilitator says, then do we have agreement that we will go ahead and do the display? Wait a minute, says Lisa, and Lisa's the one who brought the idea up. She says, Sarah, you haven't said anything. I'd like to know what you think. Sarah says, well, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with the idea, but I'm not sure why. I don't like it. That's all she says. The facilitator then suggests that the group talk more about it after Sarah said that. What possible problems do people see with this project? Well, for one thing, Mark says, we're very busy with other things this month, and I'm afraid we're going to have to really rush to make that display and meet our other commitments. And that comment follows some other people who begin to play off that idea of the problems. And finally, Sarah, the one who is bothered by it, says, now I know what's bothering me. I'm not sure I want us to put forth so much effort advertising to professionals when we haven't done an adequate job making the general public aware of us. We should be doing more outreach. It makes me wonder about our priorities. Lisa, the originator of the idea, says, I think that is important. What can we do about it? The facilitator says, that sounds like an issue for a long discussion. How about we put outreach on our next agenda and in the meantime figure out what we're going to do with the fair? So people brainstorm all these ideas, blah, 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 blah. Facilitator says, okay, let's see what we've got after they brainstorm this, and people begin to agree that they will do a display for the fair, but try to make something permanent that will be appropriate for different settings as they outreach to the public. That way the display could be used for a long time. Facilitator says, it looks like we have agreement. Are there any objections? Mark says, yes, I'm still worried about whether people have enough time to do it. But if Lisa and Anna and Rich really want to put that much energy into it, I'm willing to say, go ahead. Lisa, the originator of Dia, said, Sarah, since you were concerned about this, will you help in planning the display to make sure it's appropriate in its contents? Sarah agrees, and then they go on to other issues. Now you see how long that takes. But what came out of that was people expressing their feelings, people honoring that, a new development of priorities for the group, a clarification of the values of the group, public outreach versus advertising to professionals, and so on. Much different than just saying, should we do a display or not? Yes, how many want to? Okay, who's going to do it? Okay.
The problem with that group is because you're a committee person in charge with an authoritarian leader, and up there didn't want to be disturbed by anything else. Upset his program or her person program and push through the original idea they want to go through regardless of what the other community is doing.
Okay, now that's the next thing I want to talk about is what kind of groups is consensus decision making appropriate for? What does the group have to be like? This is what I'm talking about here is an idea where everyone in the group agrees to the group's purpose and agrees to the process and is going to uphold it. Okay. Do you have any other questions before I go on? Are you all with me? I feel like I'm just blabbing in here, just knitting.
I wanted to add a comment a while ago about the autocratic and those things.
Yeah.
Sometimes there is a job involved that has those particular things in the job description, and it has to be done by that one person, mm-hmm. or two or three, or whatever. Mm-hmm. In that way, I don't think it has the same value as values as the consensus. Mm-hmm.
Well, there might be within the group. Let's say Holden uses a pure consensus model, but in the bookstore, I'm allowed to make hot. Total decisions about what clothes get ordered. Then I'm an autocrat in that small, tiny place, but I live within a consensus group. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
We can have different roles that will have different different power. Yeah. But I'm not making decisions for the entire community. It's when the entire community would get together, how are you going to behave?
Make a positive comment about the example you used, that you say that we've already come to the conclusion that a lot of us are thinking that it's better to use consensus. It's kind of the way we're going into this. But that one example really showed that they got a lot farther doing a lot of other things, even using the long process, because they developed a lot of things, like developing the policy and stuff.
Yeah, through the consensus approach.
Yeah.
The advantage of just to summarize, the advantage of consensus is that the decisions, when they're finally made, are of high quality because they reflect so much of the group. They also encourage individual creativity. The people really feel like their brains, the wheels are turning when they're in that kind of group. They're really chugging along. There's a sense of commitment on everyone's part to the decision. People clarify the values of the group in the process, and they also learn new skills, and by that I mean group skills, how to be with each other, human relations skills. So in that sense, it's rewarding to be a member. Okay, that's, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, here we go. This is my second part now. Second part is, let me get my time. That was, what is consensus decision making? This part is called conditions for use of consensus decision. And I lead off with the sentence, using consensus is not easy. This is the way it ought to be. Wouldn't this be nice if groups and families and everybody did this? But it's work, and it's learning something new. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that's bad, because if you think of every other decision, kind of decision-making model, you're always, it's always hard, it's not easy. Majority rule, heck, you gotta learn Robert's Rules of Order to go through your precinct meeting, you know, in your neighborhood. And if you don't know them, then you're inhibited and or prohibited from getting your ideas out. So it's not like this is the only model in the world that you have to learn a lot. You have to learn all the models, how to do them. They all take work. Is what I'm saying. However, consensus decision making in its purest form does assume that the members of the group have a certain degree of skill. Skill in being able to communicate with one another. And it also assumes that the members have a certain attitude about the group and about the decision making process. Let me give you a real general statement about that, which is, we've grown up in a competitive society. We've mostly learned decision making in a competitive format. There are many of us who, to turn and trust in a cooperative model takes a lot of change. We may not be willing to give up or risk what it takes to be cooperative in a group. Or we may be willing to do it, but we may not trust that the others will do it. So we're always a little nervous that somebody might not turn around and become competitive or one-up us or whatever. So it's hard. A group that's unprepared for consensus decision making will have a difficult time with it, and it will result in frustration, resentment of the time that it takes, and alienation from the process. And by unprepared for consensus decision making, this is what I mean. If there are people in the group that are ignorant of the process, of the procedure for doing consensus decision making, it will feel like a frustrating job. Or if there are people in the group who lack skills in communication, if there are people who don't know how to listen, if there are people who don't know how to handle conflict, it will feel like a frustrating job. If there are people in the group who are disinterested in the group, who are only there because they have to be there, or if there are people in the group who are disinterested in the other people in the group, only really are interested in some but not in everyone, then it will feel like a frustrating job. And if there are people in the group who lack trust in each other and in the predictability of each other, it will feel like a frustrating job. Okay. When that happens, there are several consequences. Oh, let me add one more thing. If there are people in the group who hold social prejudices, it will feel like a frustrating job. If there are people who believe that young people shouldn't have a voice, if there are people who believe that only people who hold certain jobs really have a voice, then it's going to feel frustrating. Consequences of that kind of unpreparedness result in some people controlling the group more than others. People will be able to figure out a way to promote their own power in a group like that, where some people are holding back or hanging back or are passive. There will become a sense that we're taking more and more time to do less and less and less. And the people who really care will feel burned out. They're trying to get the group to work and it's not working. Okay? Some opinion in the gloomy picture there. So I guess what I'm really saying there is if you're going to use consensus decision making, you need to educate yourself on how to do it. And then you need to decide whether or not you're committed. You need inspiration too. You need to see it work. And you can think, I mean, I can think to moments in groups that just by chance, the group worked beautifully and the decision came out and it was glorious. And I mean, it made me feel glad to be alive and glad to be part of the human race. And it was wonderful, you know, and it's a moment in time and felt like we were unified. And, you know, and that was luck. And I think what they're saying in this book is you can work and make that happen more often. Not every single time, but it can happen more. Okay, what are the conditions that support such a model? Here are some. A unity of purpose. That the group knows what it's about. Why it's a group and what the group itself is about. Why are we meeting? What are we trying to get at? That we agree about what that is. The group does. Second thing is that the members have equal access to power in the group. What that means is that there is no formal hierarchy in the group which gives one member any more power in the group than any other member in the group. It's set up that everyone has as much say and as much power. There is an intentional effort to share that power and redistribute it so that that happens. And that there's certain techniques you can use to redistribute the power. And that means despite people who've been there longer than other people, despite people who are more assertive, despite people who can rattle off ideas at the drop of a hat, that doesn't matter. Somehow the power gets equalized. Okay, and also another condition for use of this model is that there is some autonomy of the group. We brought this up a minute ago. There is some autonomy of the group from external hierarchies. In other words, the group is not part of a larger system that does not use consensus decision making. I was a part of a university department that tried to use consensus decision making. The university used majority rule. The director of my department was part of my group and tried to equalize her power. But when she walked out of that group and walked into the president's staff or went to the board of trustees meeting, they expected her to be responsible for any decision that our little group made by consensus. And there were times when she had to come back and pull rank. And that really hurt the process. We were trying to apply a decision-making model within a larger organization that did not operate that way. It put that person in a terrible bind. Okay, now I think that could possibly be worked out with some finesse or whatnot, but I don't know how. They said it is difficult to be equal when other outside groups do not see your group as having equal power. Okay, another condition, good, that helps consensus decision making is enough time. Are you a group that has plenty of time to spend on making the decision as well as what's going on in the group and the relationship between members? Do you have time to do that and not rush yourself?
I'm one.
And the fifth thing is it a group that's willing to learn and practice the skills of group participation, group facilitation, to really be full members? Now, this is all the ideal. But that's what they say makes for good conditions, fertile ground for consensus. They don't address the idea of transient membership. I looked for that, and they don't address size. They talked about groups that were 500 people using consensus decision making. So size apparently you can work it. There are modifications that you can use for real large groups, but transiency, I don't know, except for the fact that if what you're talking about a lot is building trust, seems to me you can't have changing membership every meeting. Because how are you gonna build trust, and how's everybody gonna learn the process if you keep changing all the time? Okay, that's the end of my section number two, right? The conditions. Now I have two more sections, and I only have 5 minutes. And my two other sections are, what is this consensus procedure? And to go through that step by step, how do you do it? And the fourth thing I was going to talk about was, what are modifications to the consensus decision-making model if your group does not meet these criteria? And I don't think I have time to do those, either one of those. So I guess I'd be interested in hearing your reactions or thoughts out loud up to this point. I know I've said a lot, so it'd be nice to hear from you.
Judy, what's your number five on there?
Willing to learn. The process and skills. I know I sound like I know, I can hear myself sort of sounding like, well, this is the way it ought to be, and I really am, this is all I know is what I just sort of said.
How is the facilitator chosen? Someone who kind of stretch?
I don't know. There's all kinds of ways for facilitator operate, and it can be a floating facilitator. Different people can take on that role. It doesn't have to always be the same person, but it can be. The group decides that kind of stuff. There are other roles besides facilitator, too. There's a timekeeper. There's a person who watches the process of the group. There's a person who watches the emotions of the group. Some groups have five different kinds of watchers or helpers, and they rotate those sometimes.
I guess for you that there's a real sense of frustration that says we're a community that really can't be using it unless we hear more about what you're saying in terms of modification.
Right, but what I've denied is we can.
Absolutely, we are. It's not possible.
with the way we're set up.
Well, I guess I'd like you to do the other two part out.
Yeah,
I would too.
Come to these kinds of conclusions.
I don't think we can come to a conclusion about that. Let me say that, because I think the steps used are not that difficult, for one thing. And the second thing is that there are modifications that can work for different kinds of groups or different kinds of situations that a group might encounter. Like, for instance, a rush for time. What does the consensus-making group do when they're pushed for time? You know, that kind of thing. So I would like to talk about that, because when I finished this, I felt like Holden could do it.
I'm
giving you the impression that Holden can't, I don't want to do that.
A modification may work with the question of, we live here through the winter, the board of directors makes some sense.
Yeah, it may be a different, I did think in the summer it would be hard to move on.
What about the winter?
But I don't know. And we need to talk about that. Fred?
Did they say anything in there about one thing that's real confusing to me is what kind of decisions should be made, like in our community meeting, and what kind of decisions deserve the time required to make them? A lot of times I think, you know, people bring up things that really just don't belong in the meeting and waste a lot of time. Most people aren't interested in it or doesn't concern them, and then it's just a lot of time spent on things that just, you know, and the more important things don't get the time, they get shoved out the window until next week.
Okay, I think that's a good point. Sometimes things that get brought up that look like they don't belong there, we may not spend enough time with to know why it is that the person felt they were appropriate for the large group.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't even know how to put into words why they think the whole group needs to look at this. But one thing they talk about is how to structure a meeting, and they spend a whole chapter on how to set an agenda. And we do that some, but we do it by name, we don't do it by item. So we don't know until the end of the hour what the last item is going to be. We haven't even thought about it up until that point, maybe. There may be ways to do that right away or soon or something that would help us as a group start thinking and know that. And they also suggest people put down how much time they want to give to a particular thing. If I'm bringing up a thing, if I want it to be 3 minutes long, I say that. If I want it to be 20 minutes long, I say that. If I want it to be the whole meeting, I say that. You know, there are different ways to work.
Bob? Also, I believe there are different levels of that committee or whatever we operate at, too. Like, we're within a structure where we have people, higher authority than we are, say, board of directors. We cannot bring up anything and change the board of directors. We have to stay within the structure of authority that meeting has.
Right, and maybe that piggybacks what Brad was saying. Yeah, that what are our limits?
For the community,
yeah.
You cannot change anything and decide at a higher level.
So you don't end up being frustrated about that.
Those of us who hope to come back to Holden, say next winter, I think it's important enough that we can schedule another meeting to this to learn more about this, because in my opinion, consensus hasn't been working really well. It's like Brad Bob said, you spend an hour talking about something that isn't important, or 20 minutes talking about something you can't change anyhow because the board's already done. So if possible sometime on, I think this should continue so that this, you know, you could, would you be willing to run another session?
Yeah, I'd be willing to tell you the rest of what I got here. Also, I know that some of us have been in situations where consensus has worked, and I think that would be really helpful.